So now it's time for questions.
What languages are you enjoying programming in these days?
I don't have time for programming anymore. I have been involuntarily self-promoted into management.
In your third category of copyright protections, I guess?
I wouldn't call it protection. That's a propaganda word. But the third category of works is art.
That one seems most ripe for what we call out exceptions for, like parody.
Oh, I'm in favor of keeping fair use and making it somewhat bigger also. Surely you should be free to publish your parody at any time. But I'm only talking about reducing copyright power. I'm not talking about increasing it.
Would a 10-year limit on copyright favor public domain at the expense of digital commons or commons in general?
You mean you're saying that copyleft would also expire after 10 years? Because copyleft is just a way of using copyright. Yes, it would to some extent. However, I think that would be no disaster if 10 years old versions of things could be used in other ways. Now, the pirate parties propose 5-year copyright, and it turns out, basically, with software, there's a harmful effect. You see, because there are other ways to make a program non-free, aside from copyright, like just releasing a binary and never releasing the source code. So after the copyright expires, people could have these binaries, which are in the public domain, but they still can't change them or study what they're actually doing. Well, that is what really makes things asymmetrical, because the result would be that when free software's copyright expires, people could use that code in proprietary software, but when the proprietary software's copyright expires, we would never get to use the code of those programs in our free software. Well, one proposal is, if people are ready for this, there could be a consumer protection law requiring the source code of any published program or commercially published to be placed in escrow with perhaps the Register of Copyrights, and when the copyright expires, they would release the source code and say this is now in the public domain. That would make it symmetrical. The other suggestion that's been made is, if you release the work under a license that permits certain things to the general public, then the more things you permit, the longer the copyright lasts. It's another solution that has been proposed.
How do you handle media that have more than one type of your classification? Let's say a newspaper that has a recipe in it, and it has a cartoon in it, which would be entertaining.
Well, each of those works can be distinguished, so it's easy to treat each one as what it is.
How do you handle the licensing overhead of classifying this one newspaper under all of that?
Well, if parts of the newspaper are art and if parts are opinion, then if you want to do something with all of them, it's easy. You just realize the most restrictive one will cover your possibility of reusing the whole newspaper. And if you want to use one particular piece, one work, then you know what it is. It may be news, it may be editorial, it may be a cartoon. Cartoons may express opinions or they might just be art. In a newspaper, there are editorial cartoons that express opinions, and then there are cartoons that are just art. Now, there can be also works that straddle categories where you can't easily separate the parts. And what we have to do in those cases is we have to treat the work as being in the category that gives the public the most. Of the categories that the work might fit into, you treat it as the one that gives the public the most freedom. Because after all, if the author hadn't wanted that, the author could have written it differently to avoid that. So for instance, the author could make the a clear divide between, so suppose something is partly art and partly functional. Well, if the author wants to make a clear split between those parts, the author can. And then the functional part gets treated as functional and the art part gets treated as art, and it's obvious. So if the author chooses to mix them up in such a way that it's not easy to split them, since it's the author's decision, it has to work against the author. And the whole thing gets treated as functional. And if you're an author and you don't want that outcome, make the two parts clear.
What do you think of the creator-endorsed mark?
I think it's great. You want to explain what it is?
Yeah, a creator-endorsed mark is an alternative to copyright altogether, because the only benefit of copyright, I was actually going to ask you, like, what is the benefit of copyright? So could you answer that first? Like,
The purpose of copyright under the U.S. Constitution is to promote progress. And so I think that's a good purpose, but that doesn't mean copyright law is acceptable the way it is.
But do you think that under 10 years, as you propose, it would promote progress?
I'm not sure. But the point is, the way I see it is, there are certain freedoms we must insist on. Okay, so we should keep those. And then there are other freedoms that I don't see as absolutely essential, like, you know, not to, like, to publish modified versions of somebody else's statements of his opinions, or publish modified versions of artistic works within 10 years. I don't see those as absolutely essential, so I'm prepared to trade them away to promote progress. Now, whether it's a good deal, whether we should trade them away or not, I can't be sure.
But does copyright promote progress?
I don't know. Oh,
okay.
I'm not able to measure that. But in any case, the creator endorsed, I don't like the word creator, but the artist endorsed mark, basically it's a way that gear can be sold or copies can be sold or whatever, and this says the artist getting some of the money.
Yeah, in other words, the artist, rather than negotiating rights, everybody is free to copy the work. It's just that they can negotiate an exclusive or more exclusive endorsement, so that anybody could do the book, but only one book will be artist endorsed or author endorsed or creator endorsed. And that way the audience knows that if they purchase that particular one, they are supporting the artist directly, which is, as you said, is an enormous motivation for purchasing stuff.
Yes. Are you aware at MIT there's something called the Center for Bits and Atoms, and so they're trying to basically do what you said would be that the wiseacres always ask you, should this, you know, apply to physical things? So they're actually trying to...
Future technology may give us the opportunity to copy physical objects. There's a nice science fiction... There are four science fiction books. I think the first one is called The Collapsium, by, I think it's Will McCarthy. In any case, they're really fun. But this is future technology. I don't think we need to try to make today's law suitable for resolving the problems of future technology, because that's too hard. Now, by the time we get that future technology, it may also give us the solutions to the problems it creates. But to say we have to solve the problems of future technology with solutions based on today's technology, that's extra hard. So it's gratuitously hard.
But so what lessons do you think we'll be able to learn from resolving?
Oh, well, the plans for useful physical objects, when the time comes that we have things that can build copies of them, those works are things in the first category, they should be free. Now, there's a project in a similar spirit called RepRap, which is, it's a cheap kind of 3D printer. And the reason it's cheap is that the parts are either very standard cheap metal parts, or they are plastic pieces that this device can make. It can't exactly copy itself. because it can only make the plastic parts. But the plastic parts are the non-standard ones. So you have one of them make a set of plastic parts, and you buy the standard metal parts like long screws and so and nuts and motors, and then you put them together, and you've got another one. And the result is it costs, I think it's around $500-ish. You know, this is another future technology. Someday, if we all have these, then the object models or oddles should be free.
Biotechnology, sure.
Biotechnology is a totally different issue. Because biotechnology is it's extremely hard to design a molecule that will do something predictable. And then you don't dare use it in human bodies without extremely expensive experiments, and you want it to be manufactured only in approved factories that are being checked to make sure that they're producing the right thing and not some impurities. So sometimes people wonder, try to draw an analogy between patents on pharmaceuticals and free software, but I think that's a mistaken analogy. These two issues, although they're both important, are different in their structure. The issue of pharmaceuticals in poor countries is just an issue of price. It's not an issue of whether every citizen is free to copy pharmaceuticals, which you can't do anyway unless you've got Robbie the robot to do it for you. That's not the way they're made, and who knows if it would be safe or what. It's just an issue of price. Now, that's a very important issue of price. It's life or death. So I believe that the people in charge of the World Trade Organization should be tried for mass murder. In poor countries where people die because they can't afford medicine because of the patents that the World Trade Organization put in place, their funerals should be political rallies. Their tombstones, if in that culture they use such things, should say patented to death by the World Trade Organization. And they should do this until they build up the movement until it destroys the World Trade Organization. But it's a totally different kind of issue. There's more than one kind of issue in life. You know, there's some people who get so obsessed with one particular issue that they see that issue in everything. I'm glad that I have avoided turning everything into an issue like free software.
Sidebar comment on the hardware, like chairs and things like that. I mean, if you have woodworking tools, you can make a copy of a chair. I mean, but that's not, you know, that's sidebar.
It's hard work.
Yes.
Now, I'm told that in India, it's actually the cheapest way to get a chair. If you are, say, middle class, meaning you can afford to buy things, you give an artisan a chair and say, make another one like this. So, okay, that's a different situation. In India, I think everybody's got to be free to copy chairs.
All right, but my main question really was about the artistic license or whatever you want to call it, or the domain of art and being able to modify it. And the inability to modify art for 10 years or whatever time period can stifle commentary on society that kind of riffs on the art.
Well, so yes and no, because parody...
But
the point is, the main way in which that might happen is parody. And parody is a special exception and should be.
But isn't parody commenting on the object itself as opposed to commenting on society?
Satire is not fair use. Yeah. To our fine laws.
I don't think that is very stifling. Because if you want to use satire, there are a lot of works that are more than 10 years old that you could use as your vehicle for the satire. So basically what I'm saying is 10 years is not going to stifle very much.
But things have a social currency, and if you can tweet things and play on that social currency, it adds to its message and its popularity, I think.
Maybe so. I mean, I'm not insisting on keeping this much of the copyright system, but I think it would be something we could live with.
Well, I just want to add to that you said that some things are desperately urgent and some things aren't. I want to say, if you're an artist, it is desperately urgent that you modify this work within 10 years?
I'm not sure what to say to that.
But you make it sound like it's the corporations that limit our freedom, but I wonder if the corporations are not using something which is very deep in our mentality, because you took the example of Shakespeare. In the time of Shakespeare, Shakespeare could copy or use or remodel or reshape all the plays he knew. Nowadays, I take just an example. Recently, they discovered that Nabokov had read a short story that gave the little, you know, sparkle for Lolita. And it was like almost destroying Nabokov. It was intended, or at least to diminish his standing, just because he had used or he had come across something that sparkled his inspiration. We have a very different mentality now. We think that everything has to come from self, you know, the original.
Well, this is the romantic idea of the author, or the artist, as the one who is totally original.
Right.
And I don't want to get into that dispute so much, but I think it's pretty clear that it's the corporations that lobby for these laws that take away our freedom more and more.
And they use this deep?
Well, they use they can use anything.
Sure.
So, okay. Yeah, they there are many ways we can look at it, but which way we tend to look at things is a matter of what we've heard other people say. And that's what a publicity campaign can shape.
I have a practical question. For example, suppose I go to a potential investor and tell them, I want to create a game, but I'm going to use basically open source free software concepts, and all the source code is going to be free. What investor in their right mind is going to give me?
I don't care. Basically, if the game is not free, then it's a bad thing and it shouldn't exist. So the question of whether you can find somebody to pay you to write the free one, that's a practical detail. Now, I've got one idea for how you might do that. Suppose there are people that like games. They could join an organization and pay dues with the purpose of financing you, or whoever it would be, to make more games. Or they could put up a prize for games they really like. And, you know, there are various ways that we can fund things. It doesn't have to be done in one particular way. Now, when society is accustomed to solving a certain problem in one particular way, there are always those that learn how to take advantage of that and start drawing benefits from that. And whenever someone proposes to stop, to get rid of that method, those who benefit from it will say, if you stop supporting the activity in this way, it won't happen. But that's not necessarily true, because we could support it in some other way.
I thought other types of laws, like trademarks, patents, trade...
They have nothing in common with copyright law. It's a mistake to even juxtapose them. So each of those laws is totally different from the others. You may have heard somebody use the confusing propaganda term, quote, intellectual property, unquote. That term should never be used, because it lumps together these laws that have nothing in common.
I guess my question is, if you were to rewrite these laws, you know, you sort of outline your plan for what you'd like.
I'm sorry, these are totally different issues. I do not want to legitimize the idea that these... that those other laws have some particular reason to be mentioned in conjunction with copyright law, because they don't. You could pick any bunch of other unrelated laws. You know, there are thousands of laws. Pick four of them and suggest, and say, apropos of copyright law, what would I want to do about say voting rights law and air quality law, and I don't know, they're different issues. Some of them I've thought about, some I haven't.
What's your opinion of Nobel Sues and the relationship with Microsoft?
He's asking what I think about the Novell-Microsoft pact. Well, it was betrayal of the free software community, and it was very dangerous, which is why we designed something into version 3 of the GNU GPL to try to make it backfire against Microsoft, and why GPL version 3 forbids any new pacts of the same kind.
Over the last 10 years, it seems to me that sharing can have two very different meanings. One of them being the interpersonal one, what, among friends, and the other one, the most commonly used, on peer-to-peer networks. I wonder if two remarks you made about sharing also apply to both kinds.
They all do. When I'm talking about sharing, I mean all of those kinds. And at first I was convinced that sharing among acquaintances was good, but when I saw how useful peer-to-peer internet sharing was, and how many people want to do it, I concluded that has to be legal too.
And do you see, just a clarification question then, do you see any tension between allowing large-scale peer-to-peer sharing and maintaining 10 years of reduced copyright?
Remember, the reduced copyright system allows peer-to-peer sharing.
Do you see a tension there?
No, I don't, because they're compatible.
What if the program is sort of shareware with an ad in it, adware or something?
Well, remember, I think all software should be free. And that means you get the source code and you can change the source code and publish your modified version.
Yeah, take Pirate Bay, where, you know, it's a tracker and there are ads for like porno sites or whatever going down the side. So
I don't mind that there are ads on a website.
You know, but that's commerce from sharing. So would that be non-commercial?
Well, they're not actually copying anything. They're just helping people meet up with each other to share.
That's a service, yeah, okay.
All software should be free and freely shareable. I can see some instances in terms of security and privacy or even military systems where the knowledge of some software could be quite...
Well, wait a sec. There's a misunderstanding here. To say that a program is free means that the users have the four freedoms, including the freedom to redistribute copies if they wish, but they're not required to. So for instance, if the US Army writes a program, it ought to be free software, which means the US Army would have the freedom to redistribute copies, but it doesn't have to. It could decide not to distribute copies. And that's still legitimate because, you see, what I'm trying to prevent is a situation where A controls whether B can distribute copies, or A controls whether B can change the software. Now, that doesn't mean that it's wrong to write a program and run it and not publish it. I mean, I do that sometimes. I don't have any important major program that I've written which I haven't released, but I've got a few little things that I wrote for my convenience which I haven't bothered to release. I don't think that's wrong. I don't think it's wrong if the U.S. Army does that. Now, but do note that for security, the real danger is from proprietary software, because the proprietary program has no security against its developer's maliciousness. And in fact, that's quite common. Well, did I mention the back doors in Windows and Mac OS at the beginning of? Yeah, so I've already covered that. So, and experts in, I didn't? Well, okay, Windows has a back door. Microsoft can forcibly change the software without asking the user's permission, and thus can do anything at all to the user. Windows has no security at all against Microsoft. And Microsoft has already put in features to spy on users and restrict the users, so you know that Microsoft is not a good guy. You can't trust Microsoft never to do anything malicious in its software. So, and yet Microsoft is demanding its users trust it 100% blindly, totally. And it's just as, it's pretty much the same in Mac OS. Mac OS also has a backdoor allowing Apple to change the software in any way whenever it wishes without asking permission. So, and I don't know of any spy features in macOS. It might have them, but we have no evidence. But it does have features to restrict the user. So I can also say of Apple that we know it doesn't deserve your trust. We know it has acted maliciously, and yet this back door means anyone using macOS is trusting Apple 100% blindly. And it's the same in the iPhone. So and lots of other cell phones, I'm told, are similar. There's a company that can decide at any time to change the software. The user has no control. So this is what, you know, when people talk about security, they're suffering from hemi-neglect. They only see what the issue of security against the unknown third parties, and they can't see the issue of security against the software developer, who is the one that's most likely to mistreat you.
I have a question for you about licensing to the extent that a program doesn't have intrinsic value for sale, but its use is in the functionality of the program itself, in the sense that the programmer writes something and it's free, it's open source.
I'm not in favor of open source. I'm only in favor of free software, because it's a matter of freedom.
Free
open source is what people say who disagree with about freedom.
Free software, then. The program might even be distributed without any type of sale or value, but the programmer relies for their income, and maybe not even a lot of it, on providing certain consulting services from
them. Often this happens.
Right. Should then, in your opinion, should a license be allowed, which then says, You can have my software, you can modify it, you can even modify it for your own use, but if you're going to sell consulting services from it, you can't make a nickel, only I can.
I think that's unjust, because that's denying people freedom 1 and 3. One of the benefits of free software is that support for it is a free market. And it wouldn't be a free market if the author imposed a monopoly on it.
Then, you know, to the extent you have...
But it's not a big issue, because you see, if there's demand for support, and if the author has his act together, he's got a big advantage. You know, just being able to say, I see you would like to pay for changes in such and such program. Well, I wrote this program. I think I could make... Yes, it's true I charge twice as much per hour as all those guys, but I will get it done in 1/10 as many hours. I was in this business, you see. So.
How do you counter the argument that artists have a perpetual moral right to control their work forever?
As a declaration, all I need to say is, I don't think so. In the back, there's a...
Just to get back to your answer about Free Software Foundation giving a pass to TomTom on the Microsoft
Summit? Sorry, what?
Or did it just seem like it?
I don't understand. What did you say? I can't hear you.
I'm asking if Free Software Foundation getting a pass.
Giving a pass, I don't understand what that would mean.
Whatever makes you both angry.
I'm sorry, I don't follow. I know that TomTom made some settlement with Microsoft. I don't know what it says.
It's over the use of the,
Yeah, I don't know what it says, though, is the problem. So I don't know what I could give them or not give them a pass for. I don't know that there's any, I don't know if there's any FSF copyrighted software in the TomTom. I don't know, for instance, whether it contains GNU Libc. But the patent itself the patents don't pertain to GNU Libc, they pertain to Linux. And I don't think any of that copy of Linux is copyright FSF. So we don't really legally have a role in the decision.
Okay.
I mean, we wrote the GNU GPL. Well, I wrote the GNU GPL. The FSF publishes the GNU GPL, but in this case, the one licensing the program is not us. Now, it could well be that, you know, one question is a legal one. Another one is a question of what's good for the community. And it's clear that this is bad for the community to have Microsoft pushing companies to acknowledge fealty under software patents for their use of free software. On the other hand, I think basically they chose not to contest the FAT file system patents, and they're going to stop using the FAT file system. So whatever bad is happening is temporary.
Is a patent ever appropriate to software?
No.
Okay.
Software patents attack the freedom of all programmers and all users of computers. And they tie developers up in knots. They make the software development dangerous. And they don't even promote progress, because the big job of software development is not having ideas, it's implementing thousands of ideas together in a useful way. And if each idea you might need to put into this mix might get you sued, it just retards the work of software development.
I'm thinking in particular of how it might apply to the software for building a computer chip.
I don't know what you mean by the software for building a computer chip. I don't understand.
The software that's going to be actually the ROM.
Well, I don't know if they do that nowadays, but that sounds like a very specialized case, which is so, it seems like it would, making the decision based on that would be a hair on the tail wagging the dog. But, and I don't think they put microcode, if you're talking about microcode, I don't think they put that in ROM anymore. Which, of course, raises its own problems. Green?
Yes. What about access, subscription access services, like maybe a online journal or an MMO game or something along that line? Would that be a way for creators to have greater control under your
system? I don't like to refer to artists as creators, but you know, I don't see anything wrong with having a service on the net that you pay for in general. So I don't see anything wrong with a multiplayer game where there's a server and people pay to have accounts in the server.
My thing would be like, okay, or my software is completely free. But play the game,
well, you don't, if it's free software, remember, the users can change it. So they can modify it so that they can play that program without using the server. On the other hand, it might not be as much fun, because using your server means that they can play against lots of other people.
In your idea, the content provider would have to have some...
I don't like the term content for works, but in any case, because that disparages the works, and I don't see this as I don't know what provider fits in here. We're talking about a service where you talk to the server and thus you play the game with the other people who are talking to that server. I don't see anything wrong with that. The program that the user is running, if that's free software, the users could change it, they could use it to play with some other server, but you know, if your server is good, they'll want to play on your server, and they'll have to pay for that.
It has been a long time since GNU Linux has reached the personal computing platforms. So I would like to ask you, why do you think that the vast majority of personal computers today are still bound to proprietary operating systems and software rather than open source?
I'm not in favor of open source.
Sorry, free software.
Yeah, but it's the reason I believe is social inertia in various forms. And I'll explain one form, and I'm sure you'll be able to think of a bunch more. there are a lot of businesses that run Windows. And there are a lot of schools that teach their students to use Windows. And when you suggest to the businesses, you should switch to GNU/Linux, they say, well, the schools are graduating people that know how to use or maintain Windows, so it's easier for us if we run Windows. And you go to the schools and say, you should teach the students to use GNU/Linux, they say, but the students want to get jobs when they graduate, and the jobs available are for using Windows. So each one is essentially pointing at the other and say, we'll change if they change first. And that's social inertia. Well, you can find it, you know, with manufacturers of I/O devices, application developers, and lots, and in some cases, laws pushing, demanding the use of Windows. It's all sorts of social inertia is there. And of course, a lot of it has been engineered intentionally by Microsoft with the use of its money. I'll answer five more questions.
Which I agree with, that you know, a non-free program can be an instrument of unjust power, but you drew a distinction between kind of the laws attached to that unjust program and what that program actually does. And
I don't recognize what of what I said corresponds to that description. It may be true, but I don't recognize which part of what I said you're talking about. Say it differently?
That you want to focus on the unjust legal the unjust restrictions of the program, not necessarily the features of that particular program.
Right.
And yeah. So I want to submit a case in which there are unjust systems in the software itself. For example.
Well, yeah, there are malicious features. Backdoors and spyware.
It intersects with the law. So for example, I wrote a free software program that allows system administrators to retain less data on their users, which last October became illegal for anyone to run in the European Union. And so there's a case in which there's an unjust system of power related to kind of the legal imposition of particular technology.
I agree. That law is a threat to freedom. What can you do? I mean, governments are mostly opposed to freedom these days, and we try to fight them.
Do you have an opinion about the recent settlement between Google and the Association of American Publishers around this initiative to digitize all copyright?
I don't know enough about it to have an opinion. That's in category two, because that's what certain people saw and measured.
Okay, where I'm reading up to clarify is reuse and one person does an experiment, they publish the data, another person wants to take that data and aggregate it and do further research or analysis on it. What type of restrictions?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think that it would be good if they just cited that data. You know, assuming I think it would be good scientific practice to tell people when you publish your paper, you've got to put your data on record somewhere. And then the other people, maybe it's good enough if they can just basically point at that and say, here's the program we use to combine that data with this other data over there. And you could run it too and combine them yourself. I don't know. I see another question is whether that data would be copyrightable, because if it's measurements, it's probably not copyrightable under U.S. law, if I understand it.
Are faithful statistics?
I think so, yeah. Those are just observations, and facts are not copyrightable, and compilations of facts are not copyrightable in the U.S. Now, in some other countries, it's different, but I think the U.S. has a wise policy.
I had a question related to what you're talking about network services. More and more of the network services that we use today are actually using free software in the back end. But their users are not being provided with the freedoms that police officers are supposed to provide.
Well, so this I think that this matters in the case where it's software as a service. If the service is they're going to do a certain computation for you, then you just shouldn't use somebody else's server to do your computation. But most servers do other kinds of things that don't fit into that narrow category. And there, it mostly doesn't matter whether to you whether the software they're running is a free program. If it's a proprietary program, that's bad for them. And I hope that they will be able to stop and switch to a free program. But in terms of how it affects you, it doesn't really matter.
I'm not sure if I see the distinction between it being a simple computation and it being a
I think it's a mistake to try to generalize as far as you can, and that's why I don't do that. These are two different kinds of issues. If it's software as a service, then, in other words, they're doing a computation for you. Well, in that case, you deserve to control that computation, and the only way you can control it is if you do it with your copy of a free program. If you're doing it with their server, and it's their copy, even if they release the source code, you still don't control the computation, because you're using their copy, not your copy. If you want to control it, you've got to use your copy. So software as a service is something that people should never use. Absolutely never. But all the other kinds of web services don't raise that issue. They raise other kinds of issues. They're not
Google
the same.
That, doesn't
what?
Google exactly that?
No, well, Google is does a lot of different things.
Google Service Center.
That's not software as a service. That's not doing your computation. That's letting you look through their data.
But their data is our data.
Well, no, it's not in the same way. And to the extent that it is, you could look around and collect it too, if you had the equipment to do it. It's not data that anybody only is making available to them, but it's partly data that they looked around at and collected, which anyone could, but they do, and partly it's some of their own data. It's important to be willing to make some distinctions. If you insist on treating everything the same, you get left with very few options.
Why do you not like the DOM creator?
The reason I don't like it is because it's used in a certain kind of rhetoric to suggest that authors and artists deserve special power over us. I think it's intentionally meant to use the same term that believers in religion use for a deity. That's my problem with it. In a discussion of copyright law, I don't want to call them creators, I want to call them authors and artists. So that's that. I've been answering questions for about 40 minutes, and I'm tired now. And besides, look at all these shirts which are still available.